much, Malcolm.
And good afternoon to everybody. There we go. One more time. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good. Okay, let's keep you from falling asleep here. What I'd like to do is to talk a little bit about an evaluation of evaluation. That is, to look at data and the degree to which data tells us really what's going on. And this is in particular with respect to programs around HIV. I'll be talking about HIV in Cote d'Ivoire and give you a little bit of a sense of some of the challenges we've come up with dealing with data. First of all, no personal relationships to disclose. The study I'm telling you about is actually an assessment of the data within a study that was carried out under the auspices of HIVCOR, which is an operations research group of USAID. And HIVCOR is a group that's designed to improve efficiency and effectiveness, scale up and quality of HIV activities by conducting operations research, promoting the use of the research for decision making and building local capacity around it. It's a 5-year project funded by AID, and it's a bunch of people working together. Population Council is the main partner, and the University of Washington and Health Alliance International are subs to this. In Cote d'Ivoire, we developed a study that was originally designed to help inform the rollout of Option B+, which I think most of you probably know is the approach of elimination of mother-to-child transmission by using triple therapy as soon as a mother is identified as HIV positive. And the idea originally was to do a study in the northern part of Cote d'Ivoire, where Health Alliance International has its projects. Once we put the protocol out, the Ministry of Health and USAID in the national capital in Abidjan said, hey, this is not something you should do just for the local area in the north. We'd like to know about this for the country as a whole, because we wanted to describe the PMTCT cascade. So they asked us to do a national level survey. The idea is it was intended to stimulate discussions of testable interventions to improve PMTCT, particularly with the rollout of Option B. And part of that, interestingly enough, of their national strategic plan was a concern that they had about data. And that concern is shown sort of here in where they said in their national strategic plan that a routine evaluation of the health information system in 2008 revealed weaknesses in the quality and application of data. Now, this wasn't the objective of our study. The primary objectives of the study were to, as we were asked, to do a national level study in 30 randomly selected sites to look at the cascade. So the objectives of the study were to look at the cascade and particularly time delays and loss to follow-up, to look at the differences in high-performing and low-performing sites to see what the issues were with the differences and to see if we could sort of tease out characteristics of the better-performing versus the lower-performing sites, to see what the principal factors were associated with care and delays, and to look at facilitators and barriers. But a process objective that we had, which we didn't explicitly discuss in our protocol, was that we wanted to assess the data availability, the reliability, and its validity. And so that's what I'm going to be presenting about. We've already presented sort of our basic findings as well as we could, but I want to talk to you about data. So you're not going to see answers to those four objectives, although I can share them with you if you'd like, but you will see information about data. What we did in the study was that we used proportional to population size sampling among health facilities providing PMTC services among sites that saw over 10 positives in the year of 2011. And the idea was we wanted to look at the sites who were generating most of the activities. Data collection was actually done fairly quickly over a couple-week period in 2013. We got quantitative and qualitative data. The quantitative data was looking at on-site facility registries, because that's the way we get most of our information about the M&E for PMTCT, looking at registries and data records of 15 different indicators. We wanted to look at patient charts to be able to see once somebody was on antiretroviral care, whether there was retention in that care. So we looked at up to 20 charts per facility and looked at 9 indicators in those charts. We also wanted to look at mother-child booklets that are called Carnets de la Mère-Enfant, with the idea of trying to see what happened to a cohort of women who had both numerator and denominator information at an immunization clinic. And these were women who had completed their prenatal care. And then we wanted to cross-check data from all sources. We also did qualitative work. We did interviews at each facility. We did direct observation. And we asked people about perceived barriers and facilitators. But I'm going to be talking mostly about the quantitative piece and some of the challenges around data. This is the distribution of our study sites. It was because we did it randomly. It was all through Côte d'Ivoire. It was a bit of a logistic challenge to get to all these places, but we managed to. Interestingly enough, 12 out of our 30 were in Abidjan because there's so much HIV in Abidjan compared to the rest of the country. So first of all, to what extent were our data sources available? And what we found out was that there were about at least 18, there were probably more, but in the sites that we saw, we counted 18 different registries, reports, and other unofficial data sources that were related to PMTCT. In one site, we actually found 18 different registries. I think a couple sites we found them. One site, we only found 4, and the median was that we found 11. So the first thing is that even though there are a bunch of registries, they weren't all available. Okay. And this is a chart here on the left looking at the available data sources where, you know, about 29 facilities had the patient charts, ANC registries, and the offer of HIV tests. That was the registry that showed the proportion of testing, whereas a lot of these other registries that were extremely important, like the PMTCT registry, weren't even available in all the sites. So that was our first challenge. And then when you got to the registries, what you found was incredible numbers of registries. And those of you who have worked overseas will easily, this is just not Côte d'Ivoire, this is Mozambique, this is Ghana, this is a lot of places where you just have piles of registries. And so you've got the ones on the left where you've got, you know, a desk that might have 6 or 7 registries. You've got this kind of registry that has been, you know, this is a great sign that it's been used, you know. But it also means that sometimes pages go missing, and it's hard oftentimes to get a sense of what's going on. The data sources were oftentimes monthly reports. I think you can see this fairly well where you have a handwritten, you know, numbers from these reports that typically are not terribly bad, and they reflect trying to get information from these registries that I showed you into these reports. So we use these quite a bit. And then you would have the patient charts, and these are some examples of, actually, this is fairly decent archiving. I can assure you that in other countries I've seen worse, but you can imagine how hard it is to find a chart in this kind of environment. This is another archiving process that is, you know, again, not bad. One of the things we wanted to look at was when we looked at all these potential registries, how often did we find them, and how the distribution of these registries existed in different sites. So we didn't identify these sites, but and this is not for you to try to look at each one of these, but if you look at all the 30 sites that we had, and you look across, here are the major registries, and I think there are about 10 of them here, that gave us most of our information. And what we tried to show was the proportion of these registries that actually had complete data for all the months that we looked at, the proportion that had incomplete data for those months, and the proportion over that year period that had missing data I think it was at least 6 months. And what you see is that in a couple of cases, there are indicators like the numbers tested in the first antenatal visit as opposed to the numbers tested for all antenatal visits. That was fairly consistently with missing data across a lot of facilities, because some facilities didn't even do this, didn't even have this registry. And the other thing is the dossiers, which are the patient charts, whether they were opened or not, this was common. But across the rest of the groups, a lot of them had fairly decent data or existing data, but I'll show you that some of the data was not terribly consistent. However, there were some facilities like this one here or this one here or this one here that had pretty missing data throughout, so that there's this mix of some sites that did reasonably well and some sites were quite weak. In the context of measuring specific indicators, I think is important. And those of you, again, who know PEPFAR know that PEPFAR has, for HIV, has 627 indicators, which are not particularly easy to follow. As you can imagine, if you're in a health facility, it's tough. Now, these aren't just all for health facilities. But just for PMTCT alone, there are 33 indicators. So one of the things we were trying to figure out is, well, how do you kind of make sense out of this, and what kind of burden it is? And I think that this, what I'll show you, indicates some of those burdens. One of the other things is that these indicators, because all of us realize that a certain indicator that we put out tends to not measure exactly what we wanted to measure, that we change them. And then the ministry will change them. And then somebody else will change them. And maybe an NGO or a partner will change them. So that there's this constant process of changing indicators over time, which may precede that year that we were looking at, but there's a... How are we doing? Great. But that there's a... But there are issues of the degree to which an individual facility actually takes into account those changes. And then, of course, there are numerator, denominator issues, particularly HIV testing, where oftentimes you look at the numbers tested of new patients, but your denominator will be all antenatal care patients, and therefore oftentimes you get mismatches of the numerator denominator. So here's the whole cascade that we looked at. And as you look at the cascade, what we were able to do is that we had national data for each one of these sites, each one of these 30 sites. And we looked at the data that we got from those same facilities for the period that we had pretty decent information, which was a six-month period. So in that six-month period, you can see the national level data is in the red, and the data that we got from the facilities is in the hatched or the bluish. And what you found that for like first ANC visits, it was actually quite close. But then when you got to testing, you got differences. So the facilities reported more testing than were reported at a national level. And interestingly enough, there's more testing than there are ANC visits, which is a common thing. So it's very hard to tell your proportion tested because you're measuring the numbers tested in all visits, frankly, over the numbers of people who were in first natal visit or first prenatal visit. And then when you got to the rest of the cascade, and this is the cascade starting from the HIV positives, is that your levels of positives was actually quite a bit higher in the national sample than we got from those same clinics at the clinic level by about 25-30%. So it was hugely different. Whereas the numbers for mother prophylaxis were pretty much the same, whereas child prophylaxis were different. And it raises questions about, well, how did these differences come about? So one of the things we tried to do was we tried to see the degree to which some were higher, some were lower, and were equal. And what we found out that there was this variation across all of the facilities where some gave larger numbers, so that the red is the proportion of clinics where the numbers at the national level was 5% higher than the numbers that we got at a site level. And the blue was 5% less at a national level than at the site level. And then the lightish colors here were sort of within 5%, and then these whites were equal. And so what you found is even in the ANC1, where the numbers were very, very close at an aggregate level, that there's still a huge amount of variation, and it just happened that they work out that way. And as you can also see, that there's almost an equal number, probably a little more under reporting or under reporting to a national level than at a facility level. And if you just look across, and again, just look at the patterns of this, what you can see is that there are a couple of, thank you very much, there are a couple of indicators like your PCRs and your CD4 counts taken where there's a lot of variation between the national and the facility levels. But for most of them, the variation is that one facility will be pretty weak, whereas another facility will be somewhat stronger. One of the things we found was really interesting is that we looked at the mother-child booklets at immunization clinics. And there you had the HIV test in every completed mother-baby chart. And we were able to get an alternative mechanism of measuring this. And what we found out was that if we looked at the standard prenatal, at the registries, it was about 110% tested. If you looked at those registries that specifically looked at the testing done among first prenatal care visits, that was about 94%, but when we looked at the carnets, these immunization charts, we found out that the testing rate was only 84%, and there was a huge variability so that the women who were tested in private clinics or NGO clinics had 50 to 60% testing, whereas the public clinics usually had about 85 or 90% testing. And we found this quite interesting, and we thought that this is probably a more accurate, although we don't have a huge basis for that, but probably more accurate than the numbers we got from the registries. I'm going to go through this. The patient charts, one of the things we found is that if you looked at registries looking at the proportion of HIVs that were reported eligible for ART compared from the charts, what we found out is the registries reported 28% either eligible or having CD4 counts that were eligible, whereas if we looked at the charts, it was 66%. Now, these aren't comparable, but it certainly showed a huge difference. So finally, what we're able to do is we're able to construct a cascade. And this cascade was constructed essentially by using different data sources for each piece of the cascade according to what we thought was the most reliable. Not easy to do, but when you see a cascade, the first question you want to ask is, well, where did those data come from? And how accurate are they? And as you can see, some of it comes from our DHS, some of it comes from the carnets, some of it comes from the registries, and some from the charts. So the summary of the results. First is the large number of PMTC-related registries, 18 registries, lots of indicators, and lots of confusion regarding the meaning of the indicators. Very inconsistent availability of registries and charts. Substantial overreporting, underreporting, non-reporting, and it's not terribly clear at which level it happens. Inconsistent patient charting, including charting for ARV follow-up. Okay, I'm just finishing one more slide. Infrequent review of data at all facilities. They rarely reviewed their stuff. An estimated cascade can be constructed in that there was a substantial loss of HIV-positive women at each step of the cascade, according to our best estimates. And finally, discussion recommendations. The main recommendation is to simplify data, reduce the number of indicators, and make it so that you can focus on a few things, encourage the people at the facilities to routinely review, analyze, and utilize their own data, to encourage and engage district managers for them to analyze the data with the facility managers and hold them accountable for their data, which was very rarely done there and actually rarely done in a lot of places. To provide adequate training and coaching for the health workers, for the managers, for the community-based staff involved so they talk to each other about these data. When we talk to people about some of the data problems in terms of, for instance, poor compliance or poor retention, folks came back to us who were the providers and said, that can't be true. And once they realized that, they actually looked at their data, improved their data, and were able to prove that their retention was greater. Finally, reinforce national protocols for opening patient charts, which was variable in the study, and to strengthen a system focus for ANC. Acknowledge our co-investigators, co-principal investigator Al Kanay is in the audience here, and hopefully she may answer some questions. Our co-investigators were Ministry of Health folks, which was very, very helpful, and all the managers and the providers at the clinics. So thanks very much. Thank you.